Hello everyone, and welcome to Tuesday Tips for Parents of Teens here at Raising Remarkable Teenagers. And today our lovely guest is Elizabeth Bennett. And Elizabeth is a special, special guest for this reason. As a parenting coach, she's got experience working with young people, like over 35 years in teaching, and recently retired from being a principal in a school. So you guys, if you've got those questions about schools, because remember, our young people spend a lot of time at school, and I'm sure Elizabeth has an inside information about our young people. So I'm excited about that. And one of the things I'm also excited to talk about with Elizabeth is her book, Courageous Conversations, because as you and I know, when our young people are a bit grown up as they think they are, we want to be able to have those courageous conversations, courageous, and I believe connecting conversations. Elizabeth, welcome to Raising Remarkable Teenagers today. How are you?
I'm awesome, and thank you. I'm so looking forward to our conversation today.
Oh, absolutely. One of the things that, one of the first questions, and I know our audiences are waiting, that we ask our audience is, in your own words, what would you say is intentional parenting, or being an intentional teacher, or being an intentional mentor, or being an intentional carer, a person that actually works or deals with young people? How would you describe being intentional X?
That's a very interesting question, and I love it as an opener. Mm-hmm. It's about being dedicated. And really, as part of one of the strategies that I have in my book, I talk about intentional time and intentional focus. Mm-hmm. So that for me means being with someone, being with your teenager or your child or your partner, that time that you're spending connected together without anything else. So without this fancy little phone, or without scrolling, or without looking at television or movies or so on, to just take that time to really be connected and really be intentional about sitting with that one person.
Wow. What I've heard you say is being centered, being focused, and being dedicated. Right. Yeah. That is so, so amazing. Now, take us through when you talk about being intentional. For example, when you are teaching, how did you plan or map out your day to actually be an intentional leader? Because as a principal, you are a leader leading staff who are also working with young people. And also, you are leading the young people because they're looking up to you, you know, as a person of influence. Because even as parents, carers, or mentors, we at every 1 minute are in a position of influence. So how did you map out your day to be intentional?
I think one of the things that I did was I planned my day. So I looked ahead to see, okay, what are areas that we need to focus on? What are things that we need to do? So when I was leading in my school, I would go to the classrooms every day to visit with the students and just to see what they were up to acknowledge the teacher for the job that they were doing, as well as looking at some of the students' work to, you know, ask them questions, to be engaged with them so that I would know what was going on. But also the other piece of that too was I chose to also teach even as a school leader so that I would continually stay connected. And that was very intentional because most principals don't have the time to do that. And I just felt that it was really important so that I wasn't away from the action of what was going on. So that made it intentional for me.
Wow, that is so beautiful. And the way you said it, you talked about acknowledging not just the teacher, but also the students, and also being engaged and being there. You know, you're not just someone they hear about or hear of, but you're actually there, you're present. And one of the principles we talk about here is the idea of being present. And what I have heard from you is a presence that's engaged, a presence that acknowledges the other person, a presence that's dedicated, right? And I just, and I'm still so excited because I know a lot of parents that are listening here, maybe you have heard us speak about those principles, but in a different way or in different, but I like the way Elizabeth is putting it. Be engaged. Don't remove yourself. You know, let your position be not just on paper, be not just because they call you mom or dad or whoever, but you're literally present. You know, like I always say that the best present we can give our young people is the gift of presence, right? So I mean that might sound like a great play of words, but it really does a lot of good. Now, what tell us, Elizabeth, what led you to wanting to work with young people? Many people have a defining story, some of us don't, and it's okay, whatever. It's just we in this community, we are interested in personal stories and why people do what they do. Just so that we can connect with you a little bit, what led you to working with young people and to being this engaged and actually devoted and dedicated, right?
Well, because I just love them. I mean, and particularly teenagers. I think, you know, I love all their, I might use this word, like their piss and vinegar and their hormones that are raging and their craziness. And, you know, they can be, you know, defiant or, you know, sitting on the floor and not wanting to do anything. Or they could be climbing the walls with fear and anger and everything else in between. And it's just that the beauty of them in all of that challenge and all of that trauma and all of that whatever's going on, I just love them to bits. And I know that from time to time, there are likely parents who would like to sell their children or give them away to somebody else or send them to school so that they get fixed there. But it's just that really what comes down to it is I value them and I want them to be valued and I want them to have a voice. And I want them to know that they are already leaders. They're not the leaders of the future. They will be, but they're leaders right now too. And we need to be able to help support them and to lift them up and to guide them along the way. And that's one of the things that just attracts me to them. And I like, you know, particularly the girls with the eye rolling thing, you know how that happens, right? And that's usually around middle school and grade 8 girls do it the best.
Yes.
But, you know, it's everything that encompasses them because they are our gifts. They were given to us and we need to be able to cherish them and love them. And yes, put up with all of that ups and downs and so on. But also it's an opportunity for us to be able to help parents navigate that. And that's what I do. And that was part of what you mentioned before about the book. I help parents navigate through that teenager time because it is complex and we don't all know the answers and we don't necessarily have them all, but it's important for us to work together as school and community and family and home and whatever we can do in order to help support them.
Wow, that is so amazing to hear that it's a love thing, right? It's actually a love thing. And One of the other things I heard you say, which you said beautifully, is actually, you know, getting excited about their craziness, about their curiosity, about their life, because they are full of life. They challenge us to take risks, you know? You and I know, and a lot of you parents here, we've spoken about this a lot. The big shift that happens in adolescent years, and the importance of us being able to navigate that, because as most of you are aware, I talk a lot about the psychosocial stages of child development. If our young people do not safely, securely, and strongly navigate this adolescent years, a time where they're trying to identify who am I. Most of them have got a lot of identity crisis. If we don't help them navigate to understand who they are, and we're not talking about whether you're male, female, we're talking about identity. Who am I? What's my value? Do I matter? Am I seen? Am I heard? That's what we're talking about. And you said it beautifully, Elizabeth, when you said our job is to value them just as they are, right? It's not to try and make them into something that they were not meant to be, right? Our job is to provide an environment where they can bloom, they can thrive. I mean, like a flower, right? Just give it, you know, instead of clamping the bud, just provide a space for them to bloom. And that way they're able to express themselves without fear, without shame, without blame, without any of these negative feelings. And therefore end up giving us this beautiful thing that we never even imagined would come out. So I love the way you say about valuing them, about helping them know that they matter. In fact, even more importantly, you said helping them understand that they are leaders. And I would add to that, because I know we're having this conversation, is they are first and foremost leaders of themselves. Leaders of themselves, right? Because I believe the highest form of governance is self-leadership, right? If you can lead yourself, if you can give yourself commands and do it, if you can evaluate yourself and say, is this true to me? Is this my highest truth? Then we would never have to follow them around and even, you know, telling them to do this, or if you don't do this, I'm going to do this. We can ask them questions like, is that the best thing you would have done? Is that what you think was the best thing? And our young people are very intelligent, actually. When you ask them, I believe, and I want you to correct me if I'm wrong, Elizabeth here, is if you ask a kid, do you think that is the best thing you could have done in that circumstance? If they've done something wrong or nasty, they will tell you no, because they know. I believe, this is my belief, and I said to parents, I believe within every person, within every, even the little kids, even our teenagers who we think sometimes they don't think, I believe the same power that beats their heart, the same power that helps their blood circulate around their body, the same power that makes them breathe in and out is able to provide answers that could never come from any one of us. So we need to trust them. We need to trust them. Even as we guide them, we need to trust them and ask them questions like, you know, self-regulatory questions like, is that the best thing you would have done in that circle? Do you think that is kind? They know when they have not been kind. They know it. even things like, for example, if they're not eating well, you can say, do you think that was your best choice? They know. They know because they have an inner knowing. I always say they have an inner intelligence. So I like the way you said about valuing them. So I want to ask you a question, because one of our highest beliefs here at Raising Remarkable Teenagers is that our parents need to have practical steps to be able to take so that they can advance, because we can give them the best information. But you and I know even the best information without action gives no one no transformation, right?
Right.
So before I ask you for those tips, I want to ask you something we like to ask all of our guests. And this is about beliefs, right? What are some of the lethal or dangerous beliefs that keeps us disconnected with our young people? You know, like, I'll give you an example, is a lot of parents, they sing it out, oh, you've got to be cruel to be kind. And I say, whilst that might sound nice, and maybe you've heard it with your grandparents, you've heard it in the years, and that, tell me exactly how, by being cruel, you are demonstrating or you are helping a kid build the character of kindness. And when we begin to unpick, they're like, oh my God, oh my goodness. You cannot develop kindness in an environment where cruelty is what's being demonstrated. So that's just one of the beliefs. So share with us some of the beliefs that as a parenting coach you have experienced, as a principal you have experienced, a lot of beliefs that keep us stuck and keep us disconnected with our teenagers.
Well, some of them that have come up, and certainly the pendulum is swinging, mm-hmm. right? It's come from one. So things that, you know, myths or things that we've heard in the past are, you know, children should be seen and not heard. Don't speak until you're spoken to. Money doesn't grow on trees. Boys, I shouldn't cry. Don't cry or I'll give you something to cry about. You know, those kinds of things have come up in the past. And I think one of the things that we have to be aware of, and because there isn't a manual for parents, they don't get it on the day that their child is born. And oh, by the way, you know, here's everything that you need in your world. What we need to take a look at as parents is the whole idea of what our background was like, good, bad, indifferent, or so on. And we need to be able to say, okay, those were our experiences, or those were my experiences in the past. How can I learn from them? How can I grow from them? Because some of them might have been magnificent. And so you take those good morsels and good gems and you bring those forward. The ones that might have been, you know, if there was abuse or if there was trauma or if there was, you know, any kind of abuse, if there was alcoholism, any kind of things in your past, then bring, that's what ends up showing up in front of you. And so that's how you see through those filters. You see your children through those. You hear your children through those. You speak through those filters. So what we need to be able to do is move those filters away and open them up to new perspectives. And in order to be able to do that, you need to be able to give yourself some grace mm-hmm. for what the trauma was that you had in your past, and be able to say, okay, what kinds of things can I do differently for myself mm-hmm. first? And how can I heal myself? And how can I set in forgiveness? And how can I understand that some of those things might creep up, because we don't ever get rid of them, but we can recognize them and we can move ourselves forward in a more open kind of way. And then that way, then it gives us a space to be able to have courageous conversations with our children, because now we're being much more vulnerable. When we have those filters and we have those restrictions. We can't be vulnerable at the same time. When we open that space, that's an opportunity for us to be curiously engaged about what's going on with our children, to ask them different kinds of questions or sentence starters or examples of things that are going on in the world, like current events, and be able to say, you know what? I'm not sure I know that answer. And that's okay too. So let's investigate it together. Let's figure out where we can go on that pathway together.
Wow, that is so, so beautiful. And I like the beliefs that you just, you know, they are so prevalent. Yeah. And sometimes we fail in our relationships because we refuse to remove those filters. And I always say to people, if you're wearing green glasses, right? Everything will appear green, not because it's green, but because you've got green glasses. So our job is to take out away those, remove the glasses, be intentional enough to remove the glasses and say, how can I see things differently? What is different? Yeah. But then, like you said, if someone has been wearing these green glasses for all their lives, it can feel as part of your identity. And for you to remove the green glasses, it feels like you're being stripped naked, right? And that's difficult. It's difficult for even the most enlightened of us, you know? It's difficult because you feel like a bit of you is being stripped. But we must be prepared if we are going to see the real young people and the real people that they are. We have to remove those glasses, right? Otherwise, we'll have a skewed perception of who they are. And when we have a skewed perception of who they are, we treat them how possibly we were treated in ways that were not helpful, healthy, conducive, and we end up propagating a lot of what we call toxic cycles, traumas. And I don't think any parent, any teacher, any carer, any mentor, I don't think any of us wakes up in the morning and says, I'm gonna traumatize that kid. I don't think anyone of us does that. However, we do that unconsciously when we refuse to remove those glasses, right? And then we go into it. So the same thing, we see them as green, yet they really are not green, right? So I like what you said about removing those filters, right? And in no way are we saying that we who are speaking here have all the filters removed. No, I don't think that's what we are saying, right? We all fall from grace, you guys. And as I always say, these sessions are never about shame or blame or making you feel guilty for what you haven't done or what you have done. That's not the purpose of this session. These sessions are so that we can look and say, oopsie, and then breathe in and say, now that I know better, I will do better. Now that I know better, I will do better. And that's what these sessions are about. So I like what you talked about, those beliefs. Now, I'd like you to, before we talk about your courageous conversations, because I want to give it quite some weight, because in this age, especially our young people, they're beginning to jump into their own, you know, they're becoming their own, their brains and bodies are changing, right? And we want to be able to have those what you're calling courageous conversations. And I believe when we begin to have those courageous conversations, our connection can be enhanced. Now, talk to us about your book, your newly released book, Courageous Conversations for Parents of Teenagers. Talk to us about that, Elizabeth, please.
Well, one of the things that you just mentioned is it really is. I mean, the bottom line is about relationships. It's about connection. It's about community. And it's all of those things together. And it's important for all of us because we can't live in an isolated place. I mean, we're even seeing that as an example through the pandemic because we've all been through it, right? So we know that that has been very harmful for mental health. And so this is an opportunity now for us to step forward. One of the reasons that I called it Courageous Conversations is that it takes courage to be vulnerable. It takes courage to step out of your own comfort zone, to be able to ask questions differently. So as an example, a parent might say, they've been away from their child for the day, their child has been at school, and they, and so the parent is excited to see their child, and they say, "So, hi, honey, how was your day?" And the response is typically, "Fine," which is a whole other story. I have plenty to be able to talk about with that. But, so they start with fine. So what, how was your day? What did you do all day? Well, nothing. Well, then you can hear this escalation, right? A little bit of escalation from the parent because the child is saying, yeah, their day was their day, right? Well, what did you do all day? Well, nothing. Well, what do you mean you did nothing? You were at school for 8 hours, right? And so then up goes the hoodie, in go the earbuds, out comes the cell phone, and off they go. Uh-huh. Now the teenager, although frustrated, is also heartbroken because you didn't ask them a question that was about them inside.
Come on, Elizabeth. I love that.
In their heartfelt space, right? Mm-hmm. And the parent is also, although escalated because they're frustrated with the whole idea of the one word answers, they're frustrated and they're also heartbroken because all they want to do is just to know what's going on. Mm-hmm. And then perhaps, that might be one of several questions, or maybe just changing that question altogether and saying, so tell me something that was really fabulous in your day, or tell me something about what was something that you really caught you by surprise, or that you had to think differently, or tell me about something, did something happen with a friend of yours where you probably should have stepped in to the situation and didn't? So tell me about why you did or why you didn't, right? So that you're inquiring on a bigger scale of really trying to understand them.
Wow. I love that because one of the aspects and one of the things that we encourage parents to do, and I have to remind myself this because I am a parent of a teen myself, even though I also obviously work with teenagers and I also work with parents of teenagers. I have to remind myself that our young people, our teenagers, are human beings, not human doings, right?
Great.
Absolutely. And sometimes when we jump on them to tell them what they did, like you said, they want to know that you actually care about me. How are you? How are you feeling? What happened? For example, and I'm not saying by any means that my questions are the ideal, right? They are some of the questions that I have found effective are what did, being specific, like for example, what did you do? What happened at break with your friend? And I'll mention any of the friends that she has. What I have tried to do is hear the names that she mentions. So I will say, oh, what happened at break today with this person Casey, right? She's not Casey, but Casey, just a name that she has mentioned. And most of the time, when I started asking, she would say, what do you mean what happened? Because they're used to, like, something bad happened, Right. And I'm like, no, I'm just finding out, like, what happened with you guys? Did you go out? Did you sit on the grass? Did you things that are what possibly you would call immaterial, they are inconsequential. However, they feel that you care about their moments. Ask questions that illustrate, but of course, each one of us has to know their own kids, right? Questions that indicate that you care about their moments, that you care about, like at lunchtime, who did you sit with someone nice? You know, that has nothing to do with what they studied, did you observe something kind happen in school or anything, you know? And it's always about, always coming back to what you said, Elizabeth, about valuing them, about making them feel seen, making them feel they matter. And always coming back to that thing of our young people, our teenagers are human beings, not human doings. It could even be, you know, sometimes I'll ask her whether she went to the bathroom, you know, which is, she's a big girl. She, going to the bathroom is a very biological thing. You know, you feel wanting to go to the bathroom and you go. And sometimes I'll ask, before I ask that, I will say, today was quite interesting for me because I went to the bathroom about 4 times. Right? And then I would say, oh, how many times did you go to the bathroom? Right? You know, things like they have no, it's not going to make them have an A, but it helps them realize I matter. I, as a person, I matter, right? You know, or it could be anything, but even things, sometimes I've asked her, did you at any one point remove your shoes to wiggle your toes? You know, and it's both funny and like, sometimes she's like, why would I do that? What's wrong with you, mom? Yeah, and they have this smirk and they, well, why would you do that? I'm just, and then I'll say, I'm just asking because sometimes when you've got shoes on all day, it can feel, I have shoes on all day, so sometimes it can feel heavy or just constricted, and sometimes I remove them and wiggle my toes, right? So, but I like, and you having been a teacher, I like some of those suggestions that you're offering, and I would like to know, for example, for parents, what do you think is the one thing that, especially, for example, in the morning, we know that a lot of young people, in neuroscience, as a psychologist, I know that, for example, cortisol, which is the stress hormone and the anxiety hormone, is usually the highest in the morning. So what I tell a lot of my parents is, be nice, be kind to our young people, especially in the morning, because you understand that little bit of science, right? So tell us, how can we help our young people show up in school? Because at that age, most of them are going to school anyway, right? How can we help them show up ready and willing and prepared, you know?
Well, there are a couple of things. Actually, some of it has to do with preparing in advance. So if your teenager can get their clothes together at night so that it's not a half hour event in the morning trying to decide what it is that they're going to wear. Because you know, that sometimes is the pressure of, do I fit in? What are my friends going to say about my clothes and so on? If they have a little bit of time at night to be able to even have that conversation with you or take a look at, you know, I think I'm going to wear this tomorrow. Okay, so then that's one less thing that they need to worry about in the morning. Mm-hmm. Other things are, you know, if they can prepare, if they're responsible for preparing their lunch or their mm-hmm. snacks or whatever they're going to consume in their day. Mm-hmm. That as well could at least be, depending on, I mean, sometimes you don't want to make a sandwich the night before because depending on what you put in it, it might be soggy in the morning yeah. and that could set off a whole stream of things. But mm-hmm. let's say, for example, if they're going to have, you know, crackers or celery or carrots or those kinds of things that they can, you know, cut up a couple of them and put them in a bag and have that ready to go so that then quickly they're making their sandwich in the morning or whatever they're taking. So those advanced preparation things sometimes mm-hmm. help to resolve what the panic is in the morning. Because often I'll use the example with parents, you know, if they are, you know, how sometimes we get up late because stuff is going on, right? And so that frenzy in the morning creates a space where everybody's, and I use this analogy as well, like they've already got a little kettle inside them.
Yeah.
And most of the time that's just, you know, it's just simmering away, right? Yeah. But when you add those things like, oh my God, I got up late, or oh, I don't know what I'm going to wear, or my mother's making me eat my breakfast and I hate breakfast, you know, those kinds of things, then they begin to bubble up. And then that's how your child arrives at school already in that bubbled kind of state. And you very well might be as the parent in the same position, because now you're looking at your watch, you need to get to work. There's stuff that was going on that you were going to be prepared to do. And now you have less time to do it. Right. So there's that kind of space. So how can we put some things in place? But to really make this land for people, mm-hmm. it's about having conversation about it mm-hmm. and not just saying, you know, go make your bed, go get your clothes, come to the kitchen. Like, it's about, okay, how can we contribute so that everyone can work together so that we have a more peaceful space? Wow. And then that starts your day very differently than just saying, you know, do you have this? You know, and it's all of these sort of demands from on high rather than a cooperative kind of thing. Now, don't get me wrong. This is not about right at the moment being friends, because that's a different space. And that's a later, more mature space. You still need to create the boundaries, but you can have conversation about how the boundaries are designed, so that everybody has an opportunity to contribute and to do good things so that everybody has a good day.
Absolutely. I love what you talk about, preparation and having those conversations, because if your kid is like mine, they don't want to put their clothes out in the night. They don't want to make their lunch the day before. They want to do it in the morning. So the conversation we had with her is, we are leaving the house at this time. So it's up to you to manage your time. But mm-hmm. if you're not ready at that time, you have to find your own transportation to go to school. And we have to be very, you know, we have to be very, what can I say? We have to be authentic and clear about that, such that you have to be prepared to allow them to make their own way, be late, if that's what it means, so they can face those consequences if that is what has to happen for them to realize, oops, maybe I possibly need to manage my time better, or what I'll do these things the night before so that they can incorporate that planning. And I'm not saying you jump at them on the first day. That's not what I mean. No one learns to walk in a day. No one learns like that. We're talking about having those conversations and then putting this into place that, okay, this is what is going to happen. And this is my part of it. Yeah, this is, for example, if you take your kid to school, you probably need to leave at a particular time. Say to them, I am going to leave at this time. If you're not ready, you just have to make other arrangements, because some of, and I'm not, as they grow older, I know, I say this because most of you know that I have affected that, and even when she was a little bit younger, because once they begin to take responsibility for, remember we talked of them being leaders, and it's self-leadership. I'm not asking you to do anything for me. I'm not asking you to make me breakfast. I'm not asking you to get my shoes. I'm not asking you to do anything for me. All I'm asking you is lead yourself. And then I lead myself. The other one leads themselves. But there's this common thing we must do together, which is all of us live in the same car. For example, we have to live at a particular time. So each one of us does their thing, right? And if even things like, oh, I didn't carry my lunch and all that. And sometimes, and I've had, you guys know, I have had such situation like, oh, I forgot my lunch, or I was rushing, this happened. And I'm like, okay, what are you going to do? And most people, oh, I'll rush them lunch. No. Fortunately, we are in a country where sometimes there are people who have school meals. So I have said to her, what you're going to do, you're going to explain to the, if you're hungry, I'm not bringing you food. You're going to explain to them what happened, and then you're going to ask. And it's not a comfortable thing for them to be in, but once they experience that, they're like, mm-mm, I don't want to do this again, right? And because something, some sort of neural circuits have been developed in their brain, there's some sort of learning that has happened, so they know, oopsie, because of doing this, there are these kind of consequences. So anyway, we could go on and on, and I don't want us to go on and on like that. So Elizabeth, talk to us about some key things in your book, Courageous Conversation. And as you talk to us about these, show us how parents today, all these parents that are listening, how they can make possibly one or two shifts this week so that they can begin this connection and conversations that actually change the way they relate with their young people.
Well, that's perfect that you ask that, because I actually have 5 strategies that they can do. And even if they just choose one and try one at a time for a period of time, then that's okay too. So one of the strategies is, and these 5 strategies are really about dedicated listening, because you mentioned that piece about intentionality and being dedicated. And this is about dedicated listening. And really, in the bigger scheme of things, it's about the dedicated conversation or the courageous conversation. So the first part of the one of the strategies, and they can be done in any fashion. It's not 1 to 5, but it's simply, I just have 5 of them. Mm-hmm. The first one is about understanding versus judgment, because we need to recognize that emotions are complex. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to understand everything, and we're going to respond as they respond back. And sometimes that's not always in the positive. So we need to be able to understand by being curiously engaged and finding out what's going on, and keep the judgment aside and just be open to the understanding of, okay, so what happened? What made that emotion come to the surface? And you can say something like, I'm recognizing that you're angry or upset. And it's not to be a psychologist, but just to acknowledge and find out, because sometimes you need to throw those words out there to see which one lands with them, because they'll be very clear about telling you whether it works or not, or whether what you've said is the right thing, right? So that's the first part. Then there is intentional time. And I mentioned, and we both spoke about intentional time before. This is time where you set it aside on your calendar. This is not just a fly by day or fly by night kind of idea. This is some time that you actually spend with each of your children individually, because they don't often get that time. And I get that everybody's busy, but busy is going to be there whether we're there or not, which I've recognized just recently as a retired principal. The school is still standing. People are still in it. They have a new person. And here I am doing something else, right? So we know that the busy is going to continue, but this is an opportunity for us to be able to sit with our child and find out what's going on. And sometimes that's going to be challenging if it's not something that you've done before. Because oftentimes you do it as a family, you'll do things or you'll drive them to activities, or, you know, they're involved in a variety of things, but there isn't a whole lot of time that we actually spend with just our children, just one child at a time. And I have some skills around that too, but for right now, it's just about that. Then the third one, the third strategy is about finding flow. And so that means, as you mentioned before, about when you start a conversation with your child, allow them the opportunity to navigate it, to guide it, so that it's not always your opinion and your solution, because we often do that, right? We're very fast to want to help. We want to solve the problem. And sometimes it's not about that. Sometimes it's just about allowing them to navigate and to direct the flow of the conversation. The fourth one is to understand first and then to speak. So you're understanding where they're. So one of the things that you can do with that is to ask them what you want. What do they want of you in that conversation? Do they want you to help them solve the problem? Do they want you just to be listening so that they can vent about what was going on in their life?
That's right.
Or do they want you to help them along to navigate to maybe, you know, if it needs to be that you go beyond your home to find a solution to a particular problem, then they will ask you to go along with them, or you can ask them. But it really is about giving them that opportunity, because that's where the value comes in. Wow, my mom said, well, how would you like me to help? Well, because then they're valued for being able to say what they need to say, and the trust and the safety is around their being able to express what's going on for them. And when they know that they have that trust and that safety about being able to spew out whatever's on their heart at that moment, that's a relief, and it's also a value too, because they've given you a role, and that makes them feel important and valued, and it gives them a better sense of their self-esteem. And then the fifth one is about reflective engagement. And that's about acknowledging. That's about when they tell you something that's been on their heart for a long time, and you acknowledge them for saying, thank you for sharing that with me. I can't believe that you held on to that by yourself for so long.
Wow. You guys, you want to grab a hold of Elizabeth's book. You know, I'm just awed by the gems that you have dropped. You talked about dedicated listening, not just listening, or not just hearing, like dedicated listening. So you are receiving what they are saying. And then you talked about having that intentional time with each child, not as a group. I mean, our kids are used to being in groups everywhere, right? And when they are alone, they're alone by themselves in their room, right? So how special can you make it when you decide to have this sort of, I call them dates with your kid, dates with your kid, so they feel it's my day today. And they look forward to that because they feel important. They feel they matter, right? And then you talked about finding flow, right? And you also talked about understanding them first, right? And actually, one of the best one that you talked about is reflective, what did you call it? Reflective
engagement.
Yeah, reflective engagement. And I want to mention that a bit of that. I want us to unpick a little bit of reflective engagement and correct me if I got it wrong. And this is what I understood, and it blew my mind, to be honest. It's reflective. When we think about reflective, it's going back to what we have talked about or what we have thought, maybe even the words that we have said, and looking at them again and thinking, did I do right by me? Did I do right by you? And if not, how can I make it better? And the reason it sparked something in me is in our engagement with our young people, what I have found is a lot of parents find it hard to say that they are sorry. Yeah, but I feel, and correct me if I'm wrong, I feel if we can practice this reflective engagement, it's going to be easy for us to say, oh, I actually didn't get it right. I'm sorry. Maybe I should have done it like this. And we're not trying to, it's not an opportunity to justify what we did was right, but it's an opportunity to look at it and say, oops, I didn't do it quite right by me, quite right by you. How can help me, even in fact, even help me understand how I can do it better. Because let's remember that parenting, one of the things I like to say to parents is most of my working parents, they really regard their customers highly, and customer feedback is high, most pivotal importance. We need to recognize ourselves as parents, our customers are our kids, right?
Yeah.
So that's, we are in the business of customer service, right? So their feedback is very crucial, because we can't do a good job if we are not meeting their needs, meeting their wants. And the only way to know their needs is to have these, what you're calling, courageous conversations with them, Elizabeth. So, and we are getting to that time where we will be winding up. I want to ask you, how can our listeners find you, and where can they find you? Because I feel there's so much we haven't spoken about. There's so much I think we could go on and on for days talking about this, because it's about developing ourselves so that we can relate better with our young people. How can our listeners, how can our lovely parents find you?
Well, actually, I have a couple of places. The first place is on my website, and I can send you that information so that you have that to share with your listeners. Yeah. So they can reach me at...
Yeah, yeah. Type it out. They can... Those who are listening, just listening, can hear yep. it. And those who will be watching can actually pick the links. And
so they can reach me at www.elizabethbennettgroup.com.
Brilliant. You guys heard that? So it's www.elizabethbennettgroup.com. Right? Nice. So where can they find the book, Courageous Conversations?
Well, if they go to my website, there are a variety of links that they can click on, depending on whether they want to listen to the book or whether they want to buy the real thing, or even if they want to book a conversation with me so that I can help them with additional strategies. You know, I have a couple of workshops that are coming up soon. So, you know, if they're interested in getting into one of those, I would be delighted to help your listeners.
Oh, brilliant, guys. You know that we love to take action here. And I know that if anything, and I believe a lot of what Elizabeth said has resonated with you, I would like you to look her up at www.elizabethbennettgroup.com. Book that conversation. If you want to check what she's on about, read through, do something, right? Because remember, it's about taking action so that we can get our transformation. So I'd like to ask you, what last words, last remarks, tips, or something that you would like to bless our family here, our community, lovely community here? Have you got any sort of last send us away with?
I think one of the things that I would just like to share with our community and our family, mm-hmm, is busyness will always be there. Your children might not be.
Wow. How sobering that is. Wow. Even that touched me. So we are going to finish it right here because I don't want to water that down. Business will always be there. Business will always be there. Our children may not always be here. So let's choose wisely. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening to us. I am so, so grateful, so, so delighted. And here at Raising Remarkable Teenagers, where we help parents of teenagers raise highly effective teenagers without losing their minds. You guys, thank you, thank you, thank you. And please share this video, this conversation, so that more parents can be blessed. I wish you all the best today, and we will see you in our next episode, Choose the Tips for Parents of Teens, here at Raising Remarkable Teenagers. Thank you very much. Bye-bye for now. Bye-bye.